There are a number of things we could talk about in terms of Yom Kippur. I don't know if there's a preference. I think, I don't remember what we spoke about last year this time. I don't know if anyone else remembers. The one issue that I think is certainly a priority for this time of year is the obligation of Mechila, of asking Mechila. Maybe we'll talk for a few minutes about that. There is a well-known Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us in Masachis Yoma that Yom Kippur is only mechaper if a person did something wrong to somebody else, so then Yom Kippur is not going to atone unless he gets mechila from that person. And there's a whole discussion what exactly that means. What's the scope of this idea that Yom Kippur is not mechaper? Some understand that to mean, simply like it sounds, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can forgive you for the averis that you do that are between you and him. Machal Shabbos, you eat non-kosher food, whatever it is, you don't daven right, whatever it is, so God can forgive you for that. But if you hurt your friend, so then you need him to forgive you. He's the Baal Dabur. Some understand it a little bit further, that in general, many averis are compound averis. They could have an aspect of Ben Adam L'Makom and Ben Adam L'Chaver. Or you could even argue that every Ben Adam L'Chaver is really compound, because by definition you're also violating God's law, because God told you not to do it. So if you steal something, you're stealing from your friend, and you're offending God who told you not to steal. So maybe what it means is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't forgive the part, his part, his stake in the Avera, until the victim forgives. And then there go those who go even further. It's attributed to the Vilna Gaon and his Siddur, and others who say a very striking position, that there's no mechila for anything on Yom Kippur until you get mechila from those who you have wronged. So all your averis, ben adam l'makom, all of the chilul Shabbos and the treifas and the whatever else, is not going to get forgiven unless you get mechila from those who you have hurt. So that's clearly a very striking position. So what is that about? So we could suggest it has to do with the following discussion. What are we trying to accomplish when we ask Mechila? So Mishnah tells us you have to ask for forgiveness. So what is that about? Is that simply about you shouldn't press charges? You know, essentially the victim has a claim against you, and you need him to drop the claim if you want to go free. Is that what's going on? If that's all there is to it, so then you might say that if you were to know that the person is mocha without your asking, if you have such a setting, so then you shouldn't have to ask. So for example, there's a tefillah that's in the Machzorim before Kol Nidre called Tefillah Zaka. It was written by the Chai Adam. So maybe you should pick your victims carefully. Maybe you should only harass people who you know say the Tefillah Zaka, because they say right before Yom Kippur, I forgive anybody who did anything wrong to me. So I'll save you the effort. If you make sure to only hurt people like that, then they'll be mochel you, and you can move on. So most poskim don't recommend that. When the Gemara says in Megillah that Zera would say every night before he went to sleep, I mochel everybody who did anything to me. So he should be an easy victim too. Okay, so pick on people who have this practice and save yourself the effort. So for the most part, this is not recommended. This is not assumed that even if you were to know that the person is forgiving you, apparently there's still a chiyuv of bakashas mechila, of asking for the mechila. That's how most assume. They point out there's a Gemara in Yuma that tells a story that Rav was offended by a certain butcher, and the butcher had not yet asked him for mechila. So Rav made it his business to be in the neighborhood of the butcher so that he could ask him for mechila. The story didn't end well, but that's the part that we're focusing on right now. So some point out that, I think Rabitzel Petterberger in the Sefer Kofleor talks about this, that if you're going to say that all you need is to get forgiveness, so why did Rav have to waste his time making himself available? Why didn't he just send out a memo that he forgives? He's clearly ready to forgive if he's trying to make himself available. Let himself just forgive, and doesn't have to make himself available. Parenthetically, some point out, this idea of making himself available is like God does. You know, Chazal tell us this time of year, the Seres Yemei Tshuva is considered to be the meaning of the pasuk Dirshu Hashem Bihimotso. We should seek out God when He is found. And the Gemara says, Elu Aseres Hayamim Bein Roshanah Yom Kippur, that during these days God is close to us, and that is easily accessible when we want to try to do tshuva, more so than the rest of the year. So too, Rav followed a similar policy. He tried to be accessible when he was ready to forgive. But why did he have to do even that? Let him just forgive. So many quote a proof from here that there is a need to actually ask for forgiveness. So what is that about? Why do you have to actually ask if the forgiveness can be obtained without it sometimes? So here there could be a couple of reasons. Right, so the first reason we've already established, you need to get the release of claims, but that in theory you might even get without it. So if you still need it, so why would you still need it? So one possible reason is that this is part of the process of tshuva. That it's not just the getting the mechila, but it's the asking, which is a submissive experience, where here you have, you know, kind of expressed gaiva over a person, you've taken advantage of a person somehow, you've hurt somebody's feelings. Now you have to come in the opposite direction, you have to come hat in hand and say, forgive me. So one could see how that is really a restorative process, how that turns things upside down. And that's a possibility too. There are those who maintain that there's a chiyuv of asking for mechila, so that you can go through this process of discomfort in a positive sense as part of tshuva. And they tell a joke about yeshiva guys. They say that yeshiva guys, they know that putting sugar in the coffee makes it sweet. But they're not sure exactly how it works. Is it the sugar that makes it sweet? Or maybe it's the stirring that makes it sweet. And the sugar is just there to know when you've stirred enough. When the sugar is dissolved, you know that you've stirred enough. So the truth is, you have that kind of a model here. What's the point of asking for mechila? Is it really because you need the mechila? Or maybe it's really, or in addition to that, that you have to ask for mechila. And how do you know when you've asked right? When you get it, so that shows you that you went through the right process. When the person decides to forgive you, so then that shows that you have done what you've had to do. So that's a perspective that some take that could impact on a few things. For example, there is a din brought in Shulchan Aruch that we all learn in school, that if the person asks for mechila three times and the victim doesn't give it, so then he's fulfilled his responsibility. Which means three separate times, three separate ways. It's not the okay, I'm free. It's not like that, right? You have to come today and say, listen, I'm sorry, I hope you're mochel me. And then you say no, then I come back tomorrow with flowers, and I say, you know, listen, I got this specially for you, I really hope you're mochel me. And then you say no, then I come back the third day, and I say, listen, I'm a broken man here, please, you know, I'm so sorry, I hope you're mochel me. And they say, nope, still not. Okay, so then fine, then it's back on you. But if it's about obtaining somebody's permission, somebody's release, so you don't find that anywhere else. Right? You have a teenage son who wants his father to give him the car. So there's no rule that if he asks the father three times, the father says no three times, okay, instead he gets the car. Right? If the father says no three times, it's no three times. It doesn't become yes because he asked three times. So apparently there is a rule here that it's really about the process, and going through that process, that could be even more important than getting the result. If you've, maybe Chazal are telling us that asking three times in three different ways, that's a legitimate process. And if that process still doesn't get the release, okay, so you fulfilled what you have to do without it. You have gone through the process that you have to go through. This comes up in a number of other issues. For example, remember, I once saw on the cover, or this time of year, I saw on the front page of one of the Jewish weeklies, had a cover story, you know, wants to look modern. So it says, can you ask mechila through email? So it's not a new question. Post can talk about, not specifically email, but about the question of writing a letter or of sending an emissary. If you send a shliach to ask on your behalf, so does that fulfill the obligation of asking for mechila? So many suggest that, look, clearly that's better than nothing. Right? If the only way you can reach out to somebody is through a letter or through an emissary, so everyone would agree that's better than nothing. But the question of whether or not that's a real fulfillment of what we're going for when it comes to this, not so obvious. There were some who thought that maybe not, that maybe this process of submission, of submissiveness, of coming hat in hand a little bit, that is perhaps what has to be done in order to affect this process of tshuva. You also find this discussed in the context of, let's say, if the victim is no longer alive. So they talk about coming to a kever with a minion. So what's the point in bringing a minion? So some say the idea of the minion is that there should be a shechina. The shechina is evoked in the process of in the context of a minion. While others say it's not necessarily about that, but maybe it's about publicity. Here you have to submit yourself, so to speak, and here you can't do it with this person, so you do it in the presence of a public gathering. That's also the process of going through what needs to be done in terms of asking for mechila. So this is another theme, right? This is another idea that we find when it comes to obtaining mechila, that it's not just about getting this release of claims, but maybe it's also in order to go through this process of growth through submission, through coming hat in hand, and taking a different attitude. There's a third approach as well. That's a very important one. And this could especially be relevant to what the Vilna Gaon said about getting a kapara for everything. It's important to remember that in the context of the Torah, so kapara and Yom Kippur is really communal. But there is a avodas Yom HaKippurim where all of the Klal Yisrael got atonement together. And this type of unity may be a crucial theme within kapara Yom HaKippurim. There's a statement in Chazal that one of the points that's issued in our defense on Yom Kippur is that we say, or that one of the advocating angels says, look at the Jews, they're so angelic, you know, they don't eat, they don't drink, they abstain from everything on Yom Kippur, they're so angelic, and just like the angels are not fighting amongst themselves, so too the Jews are not fighting amongst themselves either. That it could be that this chiyuv of unity, of togetherness, is a crucial imperative for making progress and getting the kapara that we need on Yom Kippur. And to that extent, maybe that's what Bakashas Mechila is about. That maybe the idea is that when you hurt someone, so they could be mochel, right? They could say, I don't press charges against you, I'm not going to maintain a claim, but they're still hurt. The anger could still be there. And the offense could still be there. So the idea of asking mechila maybe is more than just obtaining the release, but they also have to try to fix the bridges, try to restore the relationship to where it was. Because to whatever extent there is this friction, there is this kpeda among the Jews at this time of year, that's going to interfere with the process of Yom Kippur. So that's an important theme, and we find that showing up in some places. Some Sofer has a drasha where he wrote that in the time of the Beis HaMikdash there was less need for asking mechila because the Karbanos and the Beis HaMikdash brought everybody together anyway. Now that we're in Galus, now there's no unifying Beis HaMikdash, now mechila becomes a much higher priority. Is also emphasizing this idea of the unity that comes about through the asking of mechila. And this idea could impact on a couple of other things. Interesting, just in terms of language. So you find the idea of asking for mechila in two places. You find it in Bava Kamma, in the context of if you wound somebody. So there the language is, like we just used before, bakashas mechila, you have to request forgiveness. And the Mishnah we started off with about Yom Kippur actually says, Ad sheyirotze eschavero, that you have to appease your friend. And maybe it's two separate dinim. But maybe, as I believe Baruch Lazarovsky, who's a rabbi in Philadelphia, has a tshuva about this in a sefer Tam Baruch, I think he makes this point, that the idea is that in general you hurt somebody, so you have to ask for release, you have to ask for mechila. But beyond that, you also have to calm them down, you have to settle things. And that's the Yom Kippur imperative, and that's what the Mishnah says, Ad Shei Rotze Es Chaveiro. It's also relevant because there's a whole discussion why indeed the Mishnah says that the forgiveness should be done in the context of Yom Kippur. If you hurt somebody on Purim, you should ask for mechila on Shushan Purim. Why is there this idea of Yom Kippur as the significant point? So some of the Sfarim say, you have to ask forgiveness right away, but Yom Kippur is a deadline, you have to get it settled before Yom Kippur. While others suggest that maybe the idea is that you need to dafka address the situation before Yom Kippur, because that's part of the Kaparas Yom Kippurim. And sometimes time passing is necessary. Right? Sometimes in order for it to be a real resolution, for people really to be able to get past it, they need to have some time pass, and therefore the Mishnah is maybe saying it doesn't have to be right away, but before Yom Kippur, this is something that should be settled. This perhaps is relevant also. Some point out the Rambam seems to have a contradiction. That the Rambam says if a person damages somebody's property or wounds somebody physically, so he has to pay. He has to pay the penalties for that. And the Rambam emphasizes not only does he have to pay, but that doesn't get him off the hook. He still has to ask for mechila for what he did. And when it comes to theft, if you steal something, so the Rambam says you have to pay it back, and he doesn't mention there that you have to ask for mechila. So someone who explained, the Chamishna talks about this, and others talk about this, some wanted to explain that the idea is that you have to settle the issue, pay back, and you also have to calm the person down. That's the Bakash's Mechila here. So there's a difference between vandalism, let's say, and theft. That when you steal something, so you stole it probably because you needed it, because it was tempting to you. So that's not so offensive to the victim. The victim wants his property back, but he's not going to be hurt, not going to be resentful of the fact that you took it from him, maybe. While if you just decide to destroy their stuff or to beat him up, so there's no personal benefit to you, that's something that more indicates some type of interpersonal animosity, and therefore there's a chi of mechila davka in that context. That becomes an issue there as well. So this is very relevant to a debate, which I'm trying to remember if we ever talked about here before, debate between Rabbi Yisrael Salanter and the Chafetz Chaim. Chafetz Chaim, as we know, wrote the classic work on the laws of Lashon Hara. And an older contemporary of the Chafetz Chaim was Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who was famous for founding the Musar movement, the whole approach of paying very careful attention to our character development. This was inaugurated by Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. So one would think that he would be the biggest fan of Chafetz Chaim's book. And indeed, he was a big fan. But it's striking that Chafetz Chaim asked him once, before a publication, he asked him to write a haskama, to write a letter of endorsement. And according to the story, which is recounted in many books, Rasul Salanter refused. So I'm not going to write a haskama. So students asked him, why not? So he said, I can't write a haskama because there's one ruling in the Sefer I disagree with. And I can't put my name on it, people will think I agree with everything there. So the student said to him, Rabbi, so why don't you just write the haskama? And put a little footnote on the bottom that says, by the way, on page 312 there's a ruling I disagree with. So he responded that nobody reads the haskamas anyway. So they're not going to know. They'll just see my name. They'll think I agree with everything. Oh, it's gone. So, what's the issue here? What is this controversial psak that Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, I cannot associate my name with under any circumstances? So the issue is as follows. I call this case the case of Joe. You have Joe. He's a very happy man. He's sitting in his very comfortable easy chair at home, flat screen TV, huge bottle of soda, big bag of pretzels. He's a very happy man. Phone rings, sees caller ID, sees his best friend in the world, Bob. That's you. So Bob is a different Bob. So Bob says, he's Bob calling, so he's even happier, right? He's his best friend in the world. So Bob says, listen, Joe, I got to talk to you. And I'm taking these introductory Judaism classes, and I learned a couple of things. First of all, I learned that there's some prohibition called Lashon Hara. Apparently you're not supposed to speak badly about people. Yeah, there's also a prohibition, or there's also a concept of Yom Kippur, and that if you did anything wrong to anybody, you have to ask forgiveness before Yom Kippur. So that puts me in a kind of an awkward position here, Joe. The past 20 years that we've been friends, you know, I've been telling people that I don't really like you and I find you annoying and your jokes aren't really funny, and the reason I hang out with you is because you pay for lunch. So I've been telling everybody this for 20 years. But I'm really sorry. So I hope you'll be mochel. So Bob's a nice guy, so he'll probably be mochel. But it's a safe guess that when he hangs up the phone, he's a lot less happy than he was when he picked it up. So did... Sorry, Joe was going to be mochel. So did Bob do the right thing by asking?
In other words, if the victim doesn't know he's a victim...
Yeah, this guy was blissfully ignorant. He thought everything was great. He could have been happy for another 100 years. And now here he's being told that everything's not what he thinks. His friend's not so much of his friend. And, all right, he'll forgive him, but now he bears all the cost of the situation. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's reaction to that, it sounds like from the Chafetz Chaim that that's what you have to do. Chafetz Chaim, based on Rabbeinu Yonah, seems to say, and we'll talk about whether that's really what he means or not, but it sounds like he's saying, yeah, that's what you got to do. You have to ask Mechila, even though it's awkward and painful.
It's like the man who cheats on his wife and then tells him.
It's a related issue, right? That's even worse. You know, it's a related issue. The question of to what extent are you serving yourself or are you serving the victim? So, that's a question. So the Chafetz Chaim seems to be saying that you have to do it. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, Chas v'sholom. Right, you have a prohibition in the Torah of onas devarim. You're not allowed to hurt somebody through speech. So to cause this person this kind of emotional pain, telling him what he didn't know, so what's your hatter to do that? Just because you needed to get the weight off your shoulders? That's not right. So whether or not the Chafetz Chaim really meant this is a discussion. There are those who say he only meant it in a situation where it was already out there, he didn't know it was you, or you know, somehow it was going to get back to him. They modify it somewhat. But most poskim seem to have followed the view of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. This is not the kind of thing you ask Mechila for. Somebody once asked Rabbi Aaron Cutler, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, how could he argue here? The Chafetz Chaim is basing his ruling on Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah is a Rishon. How could Rabbi Yisrael Salanter argue on a Rishon? So supposedly Aaron Cutler said that through Yisrael Tanahu Polig, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was on such a level, he was like a throwback. He was like a Rishon. He had the right to argue on Rabbeinu Yonah. Okay. But let's say that's true. Let's say you follow the view of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. So what does that mean practically? So then what do you do? How do you deal with this aver? So it should be pointed out, this is not a kula, this is a chumra. Right? He's not saying that, oh, you don't have to ask for mechila. He's saying you do have to, but you can't. Because you'll do more damage by asking for mechila, so what do you do? So that's why when it comes to Lashon Hara, with a lot of other things, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. This is a good idea to avoid. Because, among other things, it is complex to ask for mechila. But posts can have various suggestions how to deal with it, assuming they follow Rishol Salanter. So some say this is actually a situation we can benefit from a sociological imperfection. That when it comes to the way we do things there in Kippur, so we kind of run around on autopilot saying, Yemochemi, 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 Yemochemi. So that's not really what was meant. What you're supposed to do the way the post can understand, it's supposed to be more specific. Right, you're supposed to come up to somebody and say, listen, 2 weeks ago I punched you in the nose. I realize now that was probably not the right thing to do. I don't know what I was thinking at the time. I hope you'll forgive me, and then hopefully the guy forgives him. But this autopilot, that's really not the intent. But some poskim suggest that here's an opportunity where you can take advantage of it. That if you have a situation like this, where you really can't ask for mechila, and you need to get mechila, so in this situation, maybe you should take advantage of the fact that this is what people do. You come up to him, Erev Yom Kippur, you say, listen, help you mochel me for everything, and then hopefully he'll be mochel you. If you do this on the day after Purim, he's going to realize you probably said something about him on Purim. If you do it on Erev Yom Kippur, when it's ready to style, okay. But it's not perfect that way. There are those who say a little bit further that maybe there should be something in the middle, like, it's not enough for you to say nothing. If you say, listen, you know, maybe over the years it's possible I may have said something, you know, who knows. And in theory, would you be mochel me if I did something a little bit more specific without going far enough to cause pain or to raise suspicion? Others suggest that, like Rav Aaron Soloveitchik has in one of his farim, where he was Sefer Parach Mata Aaron of the thoughts of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik on the Rambam, where this story about Yisrael and the Chofetz Chaim is spelled out there as well. So he says, you're right, Taka, this is not a situation where you can ask for mechila. So what do you do? So instead, you have to try to undo the damage. Which of course is famously difficult, to undo the damage when it comes to Lashon Hara. And then when it comes to Lashon Hara, there's a famous story about somebody came to the Rebbe and said, I spoke Lashon Hara, I don't know what to do, how to fix it. So the Rebbe told him, take a pillow and cut a hole in it and walk around the city. So he does that for a day, he comes back, he says, okay, now what do I do? So the Rebbe said, okay, now go pick up all the feathers. It's impossible. He says, well, that's the problem, he spoke Lashon Hara, so it spreads like that, you can't undo it. That being the case, nonetheless, it's still suggested that maybe if you can undo the damage, if you can tell people, you know, shouldn't interpret it the way that they did, and Post can point out, you probably could lie for this also. And even if it means you have to say something untrue, presumably that's an example of what the Gemara says, Mutla Shanos Vasne HaShalom, you're allowed to say something not true for the sake of peace, that's probably the case here as well.
The bride is really beautiful.
Well, assuming that was not true. So that's probably an example of this. You can probably even lie if you have to in order to undo the damage. The Chofetz Chaim himself says, by the way, that not every Lashon Hara is going to enter into this category. If you say something and it's clear it had no effect, if people weren't even listening to you and they didn't register with them, it was clear it wasn't significant, it says even that even the Chofetz Chaim says you don't have to ask mechila. But if you say something a little heavier that does have an impact on the listeners and they do believe it and they do take it, so then that's a more serious issue. So they point out in the latest farim that this should be true also for the Makabel Lashon Hara. It's also an Aveira, right? If I tell you Lashon Hara and you accept it, so then you're also supposed to, that's also an Aveira. So in theory, you should also ask Mechila for that. Except that there, again, all the more so, you can't tell the person what happened, but you can undo the damage more easily. And you can not be Makabel it now, you can be on Makabel it the same way when you first heard it, you shouldn't have accepted it. So even if you did accept it then, you can revise your thinking later, and that should hopefully undo the damage. So this is a whole debate about what to do in terms of Lashon Hara and Mechila. But what is going on between the Chofetz Chaim and Rabbi Saul Salantin? So perhaps the issue is a question as to what Mechila is about. That maybe the Chofetz Chaim understands that you have to get exempted, you have to get released, so therefore, even if that's a painful process, that's what has to happen. But Rabbi Yisrael Salanter understands that it's really about making peace between people. So if what you're going to do is you're going to aggravate the person, so then that's the opposite of what you're trying to do. And Rav Hutner has a very similar comment in the Pachar Yitzchak. In the Pachar Yitzchak, in Kippur, I guess, he talks about the fact that Mechila has these two components. The way he puts it is that there should be a release of claims, but there should also be that there shouldn't be reasons for people to be angry with each other. That's what Mechila is about. So he says, so here, if the asking of Mechila is going to cause the reason to be angry, so then you'll fulfill the goal of Mechila by not asking rather than by asking. So it's an exception to the rule, because doing it is going to impose more pain than whatever Avera was happened at the beginning. I should point out that we say that this is a case where an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. This is a dangerous territory. So especially dangerous territory because the Rama quotes from the Mordechai that one is not obligated to be mochel. Let's say a person knows what happened and you come and ask him. So he's not obligated to be mochel for motzi shemer. That motzi shemer, usually translate that as slander. Somebody spreads false information about you, so you're not obligated to forgive for that, even if the person comes sincerely and asks for mechila. And Nosa Kalim explained that apparently the damage is too severe, that you can't be expected to forget about that. And then to make it even worse, so some later Svarim explained that even though we translate Motzi Shemer as slander, specifically something false, it's not clear that's what it means in this source. That the source is based on Yerushalmi, and Yerushalmi probably uses the phrase differently. It might mean even Lashon Hara, even if you said true things about somebody, but it means that you were really successful. Your Motzi really created a bad name for a person by talking about them. So then they may not be obligated to mochel you even if you go through the process fully. So that's a scary thought. Again, why this is a good avera to try to stay away from as much as possible. But it raises another important issue, and we'll just mention this point before wrapping up. So the obligation to be mochel, it's generally assumed that there is such an obligation. That there is, the Mishnah says that a person should not refuse to be mochel. And the difference between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, it prints the Mishnah differently. So in the Bavli it says a person shouldn't be cruel and refuse to be mochel. And the Yerushalmi it says he shouldn't sin and refuse to be mochel. Apparently it's an avera not to forgive. And that's an important issue, that if a person goes through the process of asking for mechila properly, so then it's not only a chiyuv on him to ask, but it's also a chiyuv on the victim to respond appropriately and to allow for a kapara. So that being the case, there is a discussion, and maybe we should say how this impacts on other things. So for example, if somebody takes a shvua that he's not going to forgive, he's so angry, he swears he's never going to forgive, so there were some who considered maybe that oath shouldn't be binding, because if you take an oath against the Torah, it's not binding. So if it's forbidden not to be mochel, that might be considered to be an oath against the Torah.
It's cruel.
Sorry?
If it's just cruel.
Or if it's just cruel, then it's still bad, but maybe the both might be binding and you have to do Hataras Nedarim or something. But it's also relevant that there is also a discussion that maybe sometimes a parent who's preserving a grudge in the family will tell a child, I forbid you from forgiving this person. I forgive you from reconciling with this person. So there's a suggestion in the Rishonim that maybe that's not something where Kibud Av Ve'Em applies, because Kibud Av Ve'Em doesn't apply. A parent's not allowed to tell a child to do something which is anti-halachic, something is an avera. So if the child tells if the parent tells the child not to be mochel, one can make the case that's also not effective. So all of this is working with this idea that you see why is there a chiyuv on both sides, not just on the aggressor but also on the victim, because maybe it's not just about releasing claims, it's also about making shalom, making achdus among the Jews, and therefore it applies to whatever extent possible to both sides. So these are some of the major points. I will wrap it up. You know, there's some interesting discussions in general about how mechila works, which correlates to these two perspectives. You know, there is mechila, like monetary mechila, so I owe you $10, you say I'm mechila, I don't have to pay. So that's one type of mechila. So is this the same kind, the release of a debt and you can go? Or is it something more emotional? So that's a question. Some of the contemporaries far and consider that. It parallels a suggestion that Rabbi Shmuel Salanter was also once quoted as saying, said if you want a good advice for life, so the moment somebody aggravates you, you should mochel them right away. And then, even if you're upset later, there's nothing you can do about it. Because, think about it, he's assuming there's a monetary model. Right? So a monetary model, if somebody borrows $100 from you, and then you say to them, you know what, I'm mochel, you can keep it. So then a month later you realize you're short on cash, you can't go back to the guy and say, oh, you owe me $100, because you're mochel, you lose your right to get it back. So he's assuming that it's the same kind of system, so if you were mochel for whatever offense this person did, then you can't come back later and say, oh, I'm still angry, because halachically doesn't exist anymore. So that's one perspective, and it goes to this question of what it really is, the nature of this mechila. Is it about getting a release in claims, or is it about smoothing over relationships? And of course it's appropriate really to be machmer for both possibilities and do whatever we can to maximize both goals, because really both halves are crucially important as we enter Yom Kippur, which at this point is about 60 hours or less than 55 hours away, an important theme as we get closer to that moment. Alright, so I wish you all a Gemar Chasima Tova. So I guess we're off for 3 weeks, right? So next week is Erev Sukkos, the following week is Yom Kippur, and we'll be back in school the next 3 weeks. Okay. Alright, I wish you all a Gemar Chasima Tova, wonderful Yom, should be only good things. And that's the story for now.